Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Ouch, sounds nasty. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Craig Duswalt, author, speaker, radio show host, coach, entrepreneur, founder of the Rockstar Marketing System for Success, and in a previous life, personal assistant to Axl Rose to help minimize the trouble that he would always seem to find himself in on his Guns N' Roses tours. Which, by the way, congratulations to Craig Duswalt for recently releasing his brand new book, Welcome to My Jungle, an unauthorized account of, and I'm paraphrasing here, all the stuff that happened while on those crazy tours. Craig was also a caregiver for a period of time to his lovely wife, Natasha Duswalt, who was diagnosed with cancer, and thank God that they beat this stupid cancer, and that they are going to share their wonderful story, so stay tuned, because you will want to hear everything Craig has to say. Okay, I'm Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers, because I happen to be one, is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they are, well, let me just say, they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, they told you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first, before you help your child with their mask? And the reason is because you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs and put your mask on first. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. We also talk about grief and loss here and the grief process and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into that thing called the grief process. Unfortunately, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we will help you through your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you are stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my books, watch my videos by going to my website, davenass.com or davethecaregiverscaregiver.com. That's, again, Dave and then the first four letters of my name, N like Nancy, A-S-S, like Sam, Sam, or DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. Just tell me your name and email, and guess what? Guess what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you a really neat gift, a free report entitled 10 Mistakes That All Caregivers Make That You Should Not. Now, don't miss out on this really cool freebie.
Okay, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the show, Craig Duswalt. Hold on, I think I have to unmute him because he was a little late showing up. Which is his
I'm being habit, unmuted for the first time in my life.
Welcome to the show, Craig. Sorry, had a
Hi, Dave. How are you, sir?
Introduction stuff. Good, good, good.
Can't well, that was a great introduction and a great lead-in, so you did great even though I was late. I was on the phone and I just could not get off, but I'm here, so thank you for doing what you do, Dave.
Oh, wait. I'm about to pull a Craig Duswalt. I have to interrupt you before I start. I have to say something. Sorry.
Okay.
First, I want everyone to know that I just love my guest today, Craig Duswalt, and what he does. I have a very special place in my heart for him. Because of Craig, everybody doesn't know this, I am an author. I have my own radio show. He's helped me to find my brand, The Caregiver's Caregiver. And as a result, I'm able to clearly target my message to my audience, which is caregivers. By joining his mastermind group and the quality and the wonderful and selfless people that are in his group, it's just priceless. I just want to publicly thank you, Craig, for all that you do and all that you've done for me. So now that we got the Mutual Admiration Society going here.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. But let me just say to everybody that you're the one who actually did the work. I just guided you. But, you know, people still have to do the work. So you're doing great stuff already. And you just basically just started. And you're off and running, as they say.
Yes, and that is so true. You know, I've been to a lot of seminars out there. And, you know, I don't know what your odds are. But 90% of most people who go through the how-to stuff still don't do it because they found out that they got to do stuff. You mean I got to do stuff to be successful? Oh, God.
Exactly.
So I gave you a nice intro and shared some of your bio, but please tell us all the stuff about Craig Dustwalt that I left out. And I'll
wait, this is only an hour show, though, right?
You can have...
All right, I'm going to give you the...
We can go up to 2 hours if you want.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you the fast version because I want to, you know, answer all these other questions because this is a different show that I usually do. I usually talk about marketing. I usually talk about how to become successful in business, how to make money, all those things. So this is a totally different show, and I think a lot of people are excited to listen to this show today. So really, really quick, I basically toured with Air Supply back in 1983 to 1988 as the band's personal assistant. I was working in a theater in Long Island. They came in, did two shows. The first show, I worked the show. And the second show, they liked my positive attitude and my energy, and they basically took me away, and I toured with them for about 6 years. Then after that, I became the personal assistant to Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses because the security guard from Air Supply became the manager of Guns N' Roses. So I always tell people in my seminars, always be nice to everyone. Be nice to the assistants because you never know what they're going to turn into one day. So that happened where he became the security guard from Air Supply, became the manager of Guns N' Roses. He calls me up one day, and he asks me if I'm ready to go back on the road. I'm like, what do I have to do? And he says, you have to watch Axl Rose. You have to take care of Axl Rose. And I'm thinking, this guy gets in trouble a lot, doesn't he? And my friend Doug is like, yes, but I'm going to pay you a lot of money. So I'm like, okay, I'll go on the road. So I toured with them for about 3.5 years during the Use Your Illusion World Tour. I think it's to this day still the biggest tour in the history of rock and roll. It was like 3 years long or 2.5 years of hell or 3 years of hell it was called. And it was a great experience. I would never do it again, but it was a great experience. And then after that, I opened up, I went back into my roots, which was marketing. And I got a job as a senior copywriter for an ad agency, became a creative director, opened up my own advertising agency, did that for a while. But then the internet came around, and I did a lot of print advertising, so that was kind of going away. So then my wife and I were running her modeling agency, which she had established in 1996, and that was going very, very well. I handled the marketing. She did all the day-to-day stuff. And then in October 6, 2006, the day that we will remember forever, she basically had a cough for 3 weeks, and it just wouldn't go away. It was a dry cough. Went to the doctors just because we thought maybe she had pneumonia or something, and they saw some stuff on the x-rays, and to make a long story short, she went to 5 doctors in 5 hours and walked out with Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, and that's when everything changed. And because of that, which we'll probably talk about all day today, is I became a speaker simply because of the things that happened during her chemo treatments and everything like that. So, and I became a speaker, and I teach now the Rockstar System for Success, and I teach entrepreneurs and businesses how to think like a rock star and how to become rock stars in their business so more people will want to do business with them. So I get them on radio, I get them on TV, I get them to write a book in 30 days or whatever, and they become rock stars in their business, and they do very, very well. And just so you know, my percentage rate is pretty high of people that do things that actually join my mastermind. And I think it's not only because of me, but it's because of the people in our mastermind encouraging each other every time that we meet and when we don't meet as well. So we have a pretty good success rate in Rockstar Marketing.
Absolutely. That's what I would expect. So you're telling me it was this terrible day in October,
yep,
the worst day of your life, that
yep,
was the catalyst for doing this rock star thing, which, by the way, as you know, there's nothing more cooler, if that's a word, than a rock star.
I agree. That's why I changed it to rock star. I used to be America's shoestring budget coach, and I was teaching people how to save a ton of money in marketing and advertising. But that's not exciting. And I teach the same thing now, but I call it rockstar marketing. But yes, the answer to your question is yes. We look back on it now, and it was the most horrible day of our lives by far. There was nothing even comes close to being told that your wife has cancer. There's nothing comes close to as horrible as that. And but now looking back on it, the things that happened because of that, it ended up being, and my wife will say this too, and she's trying to get back here for the second half of the show, but
cool.
She will agree with me that it ended up being the best thing that ever happened to us. Of course, the process was horrible, but in the end, what happened because of this, it was the catalyst that made me say, all right, I don't know how to run a modeling agency, and if, God forbid, you're going to leave us, then I need to do something else, and that's how I became a speaker. I went to a seminar by mistake, and I became a speaker, and it was all because of that one date when we found out.
Well, you know, that's my mantra. All things work for good to them that love God. And
oh, there you go.
You know,
amen.
God is a great cycler. Like I say, you know, about my experience with my wife, I wouldn't trade this experience for millions. But I
right.
wouldn't repeat it. I wouldn't repeat it for billions either. Cause it was,
cause that's great. I actually like that. Yeah.
You can steal that from me.
I would love to. Because I feel the same exact way. The experience was worth millions, but please don't let me do this again. Because it's not good.
Yeah, just send me residual every time I say it.
You got it, babe.
That's what I learned at your mastermind.
That's right. Now, residual marketing. Affiliate marketing.
Craig, at what point did you realize that this huge trial that was staring you in the face was not only going to affect your beautiful wife, Natasha, but that you and your life was also about to be drastically changed as you took on the new role of caregiver? I don't even know if you know what a caregiver was, and all that entailed, like helping care for the kids, you know, being the taxi,
yeah.
Her career, the household duties. I mean, all of a sudden, you had a new appreciation for your wife, I'm sure, as to all the things that she actually did that you had no clue. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly it didn't hit me right away. You know, the first thing that hits you is
denial.
You know, the denial, this isn't happening, the surrealness of it all. Did she just say my wife has cancer? What is she talking about? She obviously doesn't know what she's talking about. You know, that whole thing. You know, there's a whole denial. I have no idea what you're talking about right now. I didn't even cry when we got the news. It didn't hit me. I'm like, and my wife said something really, really funny. At the time, it wasn't funny. But, you know, they did a fine needle aspiration in her neck, and they go to the microscope and they look at the cells, and she did a second one just to make sure, and they look at the cells again, and the doctor comes back, and she was a pathologist, comes back and says, your doctor will call you on Monday, and this is like Friday. And we're like, and Natasha's like, I don't think so. I am not waiting till Monday. You know something. I need to know what you know. And the pathologist said, all right, I'm going to tell you now, but you'll know more on Monday. But I have good news and bad news. The bad news is you have cancer. But the good news is it's Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it's actually a curable cancer. And my wife, and it took every ounce of energy not to crack up when she said that. She yelled at the doctor, and she said, I didn't have cancer when I walked in here. And I'm like, what, honey? I'm thinking to myself, that's so funny. You know. But I couldn't laugh because I was like, we were going through this thing. But I'm like, yeah, you did, hon. You probably had it for a little while now. So
I've told that story so many times, and I really didn't remember who said it. And I says, I heard this somewhere. And you know, this is classic denial. Bang,
right.
Bang on the desk. I didn't have cancer when I came. And I've told that story again and again, and thank you for reminding me that it was Natasha.
Oh, yes, Natasha, yeah.
Makes so much sense.
And so your question was, when did I realize that I'm going to be a caregiver? It certainly wasn't that day, and I don't even think it was like a few days after that. We were in crisis mode, and she had to have a surgery. It was really bad. It was like all over, right? So we had to have a surgery like the next day, and then 2 days later she had the port put into her chest for the chemo. And so everything happened really, really fast. So there was no time to think. Everything, you know, she didn't even want chemo, but the doctor said, you know, let me put out the fire and then you could do your holistic stuff after. But I need to put this out, you know. So everything happened so fast, so I didn't realize it. And it was the first, and then she had chemo like the fourth day. So the first 4 days were so fast, no, I didn't think anything. I was just doing things. And then I guess sitting during the chemo or the couple of days after that, I'm realizing what this is going to be, because the first chemo wasn't bad, you know, for her. Her body, she got back like in 1 day, she was back to normal. But then things started happening where when she, you know, she gets chemo, then she's down for 3 days. So I would say about 2 weeks in, believe it or not, is when I realized that my role was now going to change, and I had to focus on taking care of the kids, taking care of Peak Models and Talents, so she could focus on one thing, and that's just getting better.
Wow. And who was the first person who actually told you, Craig, you're a caregiver? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was Shannon Penrod Miller, is my friend from college, that came to our house that night when we found out. She was like Natasha's rock. And she said, you know, because her mother had gone through some things, I guess. She goes, you know, you have a new responsibility. And I forget how she worded it, but it was like, you kind of have to take care of, you know, and it was starting to hit me, but she actually like laid it out. Like, you know, she can't do this anymore for a little while. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And we had, our kids were 5, 3, and 1. So, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to take them to school now by myself. You know, she can't do that. You know, all these things that we took for granted, that she did this, I did this. I did 99% of it. But she wanted to be a part of the family still, so she still came down from dinners, even though she was wanted to be in a fetal position after the chemo.
So who did the cooking?
I did. And wait, we had, okay, so Dave, you know me. I am Mr. Organization. I'm very proactive. So the first thing I did when I realized that this was going to start happening, because like I said, the first chemo, it really is weird, didn't affect her that much. You know, she didn't, I think the body just gets worn down over the 12 chemos that she did. You know, the first one, she was like, I'm fine the next day. This isn't bad, but then it got bad. So what I started to do was we had the greatest friends. Everyone was emailing us, what can we do? Can we cook? And literally, I made a schedule, and I had a schedule of who's going to make lunch and dinner that day for us, and every single day. And we had a rule that don't knock on our door, don't ring our doorbell. They left it on the front step because Natasha, at the beginning, well, during the whole thing, we were very careful about her having people in the house shaking hands because her immune system was being compromised. So they just left it on the front door. But we had a schedule of people making us lunches and dinner. And whenever someone couldn't, I did.
Wow. Yeah. So Craig, this is amazing. You're doing a great job, and you're really ministering to a ton of people out there. You know, they say one-third of this country are caregivers. That's one out of every three. So, I mean,
wow.
If you're not a caregiver, I just think of three people you know. One of them is a caregiver.
Absolutely.
So we're going to be right back and continue this conversation.
Listening to Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, on Blog Talk Radio, where each week we talk about surviving the grief process and avoiding caregiver burnout. We'll be right back.
Life is not just food, sleep, and toothpaste. It's a series of choices, both work and play. Practical and impractical. Basketball practice or piano lessons, asparagus or French fries. And sometimes you have to compromise with sensible shoes, wash and wear, and beige. Life is changing. We're changing too. We think you deserve quality, whether it's at a table, a desk, a car seat, or the pool, the stuff you need to live and the stuff that makes life worth living. Not just ingredients for meals, ingredients for life. Safeway.
You'll find the legacy of over 100 years of racing behind every Ford we build today. and tomorrow.
Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, Avoiding Burnout and Surviving Grief with Dave Nathani on Blog Talk Radio. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you. Join Dave and his guests now as they resume their discussion.
And we're back. And for those of you who are just joining me, I've got Craig Duswald on the line, and he's my interview today. And he is an amazing guy telling his amazing story. And we left off. You were telling that some of your friends told you the word caregiver for the very first time. I wanted to ask you, did you hear any skepticism in their voice that you would be not willing or not able to step up to the bat in all of your new roles?
Not even close. It was an exciting thing. You know, I treated it like this. There's a reason Natasha got cancer. I don't know why. I don't know, of all people in this world, why she got it. She had such a tough upbringing, and she overcame so many obstacles in her life that you would think, like, God would give her a pass on cancer in her life. But, you know, it didn't happen. So it became a challenge for us, and we love challenges, not those, really, but it became, mm-hmm. we tried to make it into, and for lack of a better word, something exciting, because it's a new path that we're going down, and we get to do new stuff. And don't get me wrong, yeah. I'm not diminishing the cancer part of it, but we had to do something because our minds were like, this is really bad, and we had to, it was like almost like a defense mechanism in our heads. Let's make this an exciting path, even though you're going to be in pain 4 to 5 days every 2 weeks. And I know that sounds stupid, but we tried to make it something that, okay, this is a new chapter in our life, let's just get through this, and let's just make it as exciting as possible. And
that
so,
is so cool. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, you know what I'm trying to say? It sounds weird when I say it. But it became this thing that we said, okay, let's just, this is a, when we look back on this, it's going to be a little blip. It's really 8 months. If you really think it's a little blip of, you know, out of the 50 years we've been alive. You know what I mean?
Yep, yep. No, and Charlene, for those of you who don't know, my wife got a stroke, she lost her speech, she was paralyzed on her right side. That was 19 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we took every day as if, you know what, we'll get through this. Let's just, you know, we were very lighthearted about it. We'd joke about it, you know, we'd banter back and forth. And people would look at us a little strange, like, why are they joking about it? This is bad.
And I says, yeah, and that's, and I think that's the key.
Have fun.
It is. I think that's the key. Look, yeah, we got dealt a bad deck that day, and so did you. It's bad. No, you can't candy coat it. What happened is bad. I get it. But it happened. So now what do we do with this? Do we just sob and take the way, oh, woe is me, this is just horrible, and start slouching and start giving up? Or do you do something and make it the best it could possibly be? And that's what we tried to do. And don't get me wrong, there were days, you know, the eighth chemo, ninth chemo is the worst, it was the low point, where she actually said, you know, I'm okay to die. You know, it's okay, God, you can take me. And I was like, what? You know, but during most of it, we tried to just make as light of it as possible, because otherwise it'll just kill you, you know, literally.
Yeah, been there, done that. Now, let me ask you about fear, because, you know, I've always been told that fear stands for false evidence appearing real.
Right.
And I'm sure you've heard that too. But
yeah.
It can be paralyzing, you know. Douglas MacArthur, Winston Churchill, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. FDR, they all said it. Were you scared? Was Natasha afraid? And if so, how did that fear affect your lives, for the better or for the worse?
Okay, so I can only answer mine. And we wrote a book, Her Battle, Our War, that is coming out someday. But we actually wrote it during her cancer, but I could talk about that later. So she has a totally different perception of what went on during this whole thing than I do. But I don't think she had fear. But I will let her answer that when she gets back. She's trying to get back, like I said. I really don't think she had fear, because she and I come from, we're putting it in God's hands. We're very, you know, we're Christian and we go to church and I set up a website for prayers alone. I can answer for me, I honestly, and this will sound weird, I had no fear at all. I honestly believed in my heart that this is a blip and that she's going to be fine. And you could call it ignorance, you could call it whatever you want, but I had no fear. I believed in my heart that she was going to be okay, and she ended up being okay. So I guess I got lucky. I had no fear. None at all. I didn't want to, you know, I have kids, and I sometimes go down that dark road of, God forbid this happens to them. Oh my God, what if this happens to them? But I don't allow myself to fully visualize it, I kind of go away. So that's what I did with Natasha. I didn't really try to think of the other side. So that's why I don't think I had fear.
You know, that's why you're so successful, Craig, because you don't allow fear in your life, you know.
I try not to allow fear in my life, correct.
Well, every now and then, you know, you might get a tinge of fear, but then you have to deal with it. Someone told me you can't keep the birds from flying around your head, but you can prevent them from building a nest in your hair.
There you go. You know, I love that.
To fear, you know, because my mantra is, you know, all things work for good. If then somehow God has given me what I need to get through it, and it's a challenge. I don't care. David and Goliath is like, you know, 20 feet above you, looking down, breathing his bad breath on you, and I got 3 or 5 smooth stones, you know, but somehow I got to kill this guy. It's going to happen somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah, and I didn't know how either. You know, I didn't know how this was going to go. I had certainly never experienced this before, but Natasha is strong. She's very, very, she's a strong person, and, you know, she never used the word cancer. She never, ever says she got cancer. She said she was diagnosed with cancer, even though we never used the word in our house, or you know, we said Hodgkin's lymphoma, but we never used the word cancer. So she's strong, and I believe, you know, the chemo worked. Don't get me wrong. I believe that the medicine worked, but I believe her faith, our faith, our prayers, and the believing that she was going to be okay was a big part of it. Because I think if you give up, because someone says you have cancer and you give up and say, well, that's it, I'm dead. Yeah, you're going to die. You know?
Yeah.
You got to believe that you are going to get better too.
Yeah, and I'm not minimizing the people who are actually dying from their cancer.
No.
But I do know, you know, obviously positive attitude and all that is no guarantee. But if you don't have that, that is a guarantee. You're not going to make it.
That's all I'm saying. Because some people that believe. I know people that believe, and they believe they were going to get better, and they did not make it. I understand that. I do. But I just, you know, we got lucky, too. You know, we were one of the ones that got lucky. And who knows what this is? You know, who knows what cancer is and how you get better? Is it just the chemo? Is it the right chemo? Is it because you caught it early enough? I mean, yeah, they have theories on anything, but none of us know. We don't know what. I mean, no one does still. Well, actually, we believe there is a cure for cancer, and they're just not telling us. But that's a whole other story.
Well, you know, whatever we go through, I really believe that God, you know, hands out the trials in life. Because, you know, you look at other people and say, oh, my gosh, I am so glad that my son was not born autistic, or that, you know, my wife didn't get cancer. But people look at me and say, oh, my gosh, look at this guy. You know, and they feel sorry for me. They say, wouldn't trade places with you. Well, you know what? I wouldn't trade places with you, because I've got the grace to go through what I'm going through. You got the grace to go through what you're going through. And God just gives us custom-made trials. For what reason? To grow us and to bring out in us what he created and put in us. And it just doesn't you know, you can't tell what a guy's made of if there's money in the bank and his wife's doing great and the business is going well. You find out what you're really made of when you're overdrawn, when your wife's cheating on you, when the doctor says you got 3 days to live, you know, when you're bankrupt. That's when you find out what you got.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I think all of us go through it, whether it's one of those things that you just mentioned. Everyone goes through something. No one's skating through with everything going perfect. I mean, like Axl Rose, for example, he has tons of money. He is a very successful singer, But, you know, he doesn't, well, he might have a girlfriend now, but he was very tormented, when him and Stephanie Seymour broke up. Very tormented. It was just horrible. You know, he was very sad. He was depressed, you know, and so we all see rock star tons of money. Well, there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Absolutely. You know, I love those Visa commercials that talks about, you know, things that are priceless, that money cannot buy. And there's a ton of people out there, millionaires and billionaires, who can't buy their way out of their problems, can't buy their way out of their cancer, can't buy their way out of their wife died or came down with cancer. Well, Craig, let's talk about your faith. We touched on it a little bit, but tragedies like this can either strengthen it or destroy it. Where was yours and Natasha's? I know we'll let her answer it if and when she gets here.
Yeah, if and when she gets back here.
Where was your faith before and after this?
Well, before was very strong. During was very strong. After is even stronger. Right. Natasha, I will say this. Before, very strong. During, not so much. And after, extremely strong. So there were days, you know, when you're going through chemo and you're beaten down, that you go, you know, you do the why me, and you get mad at God, and like, really?
Anger, this is... second stage of grief.
Exactly. You know, she was mad at God, and like, what I had, she had the worst childhood. She had a very bad childhood. She used to sleep, her father beat her, her mother died, her and her mother flew to Budapest, Hungary, when she was 10 years old. For a trip, and on the trip, it was just her and her mother. On the trip, her mother died, and she had to fly back without her mother, you know, at 10 years old. And she flew back and had to live with her father that beat her every day. She had no food. She had to eat lemons on lemon trees, and she had to sleep in kitchen cupboards because when he came home drunk, he used to beat her. It's a very, very, very bad childhood, but, you know, she and some adult stuff that she went through as well. Very hard life, but, you know, she got everything together, got it all together, married. We got married. We had three very healthy kids, very successful business. And after all that and believing in God through this whole thing, then she gets cancer. And that's when she said, really, God, really? I mean, you know, come on. There's only so much a person can handle. So there was times when she got mad but then she would refer to the Bible. She still read the Bible though. And then she would be okay, and she got answers in her Bible. So she became close to God again, and I think the whole trial of this whole thing brought us both, for sure, way more closer to God, even though that we didn't think that was even possible before. We are on a whole other level now than we were before we had cancer. She had cancer, but we always had faith in God. We had the same thing when we couldn't get pregnant for years, and there was nothing wrong with me and nothing wrong with her. When we got married, we said, let's wait until we make some money, and we did, and then we waited, and then we couldn't get pregnant for like 2 or 3 years, and we lost the baby in a miscarriage. So we were both mad at God at that point, too, going, why can't we have a baby? But, you know, it's just like the trials. It makes you stronger, and now we have three very healthy kids. So I've learned now, my wife and I both have learned, we really have learned after cancer, everything happens for a reason. It really, really does. We don't understand it. We don't like it sometimes, but we're very accepting now that things happen for a reason, because now we do have three healthy kids. We are totally different after the cancer. It sucked going through it, but we're different people, and I think we're much better people now. And so in the end, it's weird how God works, but in the end, it's phenomenal. It's just great. So I don't think we'll lose faith anymore. Not that we really lost faith, but there was some anger, like you said, you know.
Yeah, well... We'll take a break and we'll come back. We'll talk more about the grief process. But Craig, this is a great, great story that you're telling that I didn't really get a chance to hear. So I'm so excited that you're telling this on my show, because there's a whole new side of you that people are discovering.
I never share this stuff. This is good.
Yeah, maybe they didn't even know your wife had cancer or whatever. I know you mentioned it periodically, but I'm sure there's some people out there that are just, you know, got their jaw dropped. So we'll be right back for more. Don't go away. And, again, the call-in number, if you want to talk to Craig Dickball, 213-943-3630, and possibly his lovely wife. We'll be back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back. That's my book commercial that we made. That's my first book, thanks to Craig Duswald. I listened to some CDs that said how to write a book in 30 days. I've been working on a book for like years. And when my buddy Marcus told me that he wrote a book or he's writing a book in 30 days, I says, I'm writing a book. I want to write a book in 30 days. So he shared that with me, and the rest is history. And then I've had my second book, Getting Hope, Secrets, Confessions, and Tales of a Gas Station Owner.
I love that.
Just a fun book. And now I'm writing my third one, The Caregiver's Caregiver, A Guide to Avoiding Burnout and Surviving the Grief Process. So, Craig, thank you again for putting me on this journey, and I know you're going to say that I did it, but you
Well, you're welcome, Dave. I'm glad you're on the journey. It's a great journey.
Thank you. So, let's get on with the show here. How am I doing so far, Craig?
I mean, You're doing great. Nervous. I was going to say, you sound like you've been doing this for years, and I think this is only
really?
What you're... Like fifth
this
show or something?
My eighth show.
Eighth show. Eighth. Wow. Good
months.
For you.
Well,
it's fun, isn't it?
It is. But you're not just saying that, right? You're not just blowing smoke.
No. It's really good. I swear to you. I've had people that started shows in my mastermind, and their first like two shows, you go, uh-oh. But you know what? Everyone comes around the third show, fourth show, fifth show, sixth show, and it's a process. You know, you just got to keep doing it, and you get better and better and better. But right now, you're an expert.
I'm leery of compliments from certain people, like your mother. You know, remember American Idol?
Exactly.
They get up and they squeak and they squeal, and Simon Cowell says, "Who told you you could sing?" Goes, mom.
Yeah, but my thing is, though, you're also in my mastermind, so I have to tell you the truth because I want you to become hugely successful so it looks like I did good. So,
well,
I have a stake in
that's a great
it.
Point. Yeah. I just don't listen to my mother because Simon Cowell says, "Who told you to sing?" And she goes, "My mom." She goes, "She lied."
She lied. I love that.
Okay. Now, Craig, see, I'm easily distracted like you.
Yeah,
were there times? Now, this is the questions are starting to build on each other and getting a little more difficult to answer, so you might start sweating here.
Oh, God, here comes the sweat.
Were there times, I know Natasha's not here to either confirm or deny, were there times that the two of you...
Natasha just walked in.
Oh, that is
awesome.
Oh,
this is beautiful. Hey, grab that phone over there, hon, because this is a perfect question for us. I don't know what it is, but he just said...
is
something
perfect.
About I don't know about Natasha.
I know a few things about Natasha.
Well, Dave, Natasha, Natasha, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. You have a great radio voice, by the way. You need to do your own radio show.
Well, thank you very much. I'll put that into the bucket list. All sorts of things.
I would listen to you 7 days a week and twice on Sundays.
Awesome.
Nice.
I'm there.
All right, she could do my shows from now on.
I love it.
She probably will. Now, here's a question, Natasha, to both of you. Were there times, now I'll let Craig lie on were there times that the two of you were, like, not on the same page? I mean, where Craig had no clue as to what you were feeling, or maybe he would say the wrong thing or say it the wrong way, and you would kind of react negatively.
We're both laughing right now. We know where you're going with this. I'm going first.
Well, the funny thing is I know exactly what was said and when it was said, and I know that Craig is sitting there going, I know what she's going to say.
I know exactly what you're going to say. Go ahead, I'll let you tell the story.
Let's just put it this way. When you get a cancer diagnosis, a lot of emotions go through your mind, body, and spirit. It's like a runaway train of fear, despair, and anxiety all tied up in a nice pretty bow. And along came me getting this cancer diagnosis, and Craig said to me, and I was completely wigged out, hysterical, crying, thinking, oh my gosh, I've got three little kids, I got to get through this. What if I don't? You know, every possible fear and anxiety a parent can go through comes down.
And I had just so you know, Tasha, I had just told him that I really didn't have the fear. In the beginning, I honestly believed that you were going to be okay and all that. So I'll just set that up with what you're about to say.
Good. Okay. And so in this, you know, shock and awe portion of life that we both were in, there was a moment where I was like, well, what if? And, you know, because you go there. You just do. If you don't, you're lying to yourself. Fear does kick in, and everybody kind of does go through this. The patient goes through this. So I turned and I was like, what if this happens? What if that? I mean, I'm just going there because here we are. And then Craig says to me, well, you can't think that way. You've got to be positive. And I said, okay, like, I get that on a conscious level. Like, you can say that to me, but mind, body, and spirit were not connecting in that moment, and I was not feeling positive. And then Craig said, if you're not positive, the medicine won't work. And I just went, what? So you mean to tell me that if I have any fear, then this isn't going to work? Then why am I doing any of this in the first place? Because at that moment, I was not positive, was not feeling it. I was completely terrified. And then my lovely husband decided to, in the best possible way, he was trying to give me that, you know, feedback of stay positive, but it came out, if you're not positive, none of this is going to work, and you're doomed anyway. So I had that little nugget to deal with. So it was a very interesting time.
But then you met with Heather.
Yes. Then there was a mom at the preschool that my kids were going to, and I had seen her on several occasions wearing a bandana, going through chemo. I knew her whole story, and her kids were the exact same ages as ours, and I watched her day in and day out and said, how is she doing this? How does she do this? And she was one of the first people I saw.
And she had a positive attitude. You know, she was
positive
about everything.
Yeah, great attitude. And I walked into the school, and I saw her, and she came right up to me and gave me a big hug. And I said, I don't know how to do this. And she said, don't worry. You're just going to do it a day at a time. It's going to be fine. And she gave me some tips and said, all you have to do is stay focused on what you want. And I went, okay, I can do that. And what I wanted was to live. And what I wanted was to raise my kids. And then the other person that was very helpful was my friend Shannon. And she said, because I would call her and go, oh my gosh, I'm having a bad day. I'm down. Because, you know, the chemo does things to you. Mm-hmm. And it kind of strips your psyche of, you know, essential things that are needed to stay elevated. And it's kind of like a chemical thing. And she said, I said, I'm just feeling down today. She goes, well. And I said, I'm really worried. Yes, I know I'm supposed to be positive. And then she said, well, do you want to live? I said, of course I want to live. She goes, okay, you're positive. And that was it. It was that little bit of permission to go, I'm okay even if I don't feel okay today.
But Heather, the whole Heather thing was, she said that you didn't see me in the first week when I grieved.
Oh, yes. She said, she goes, I cried myself to sleep for 3 weeks straight. I couldn't get up out of bed, and I went, oh, wow, okay. Because you look like you've got this whole thing worked out. And she said, I do now, but I didn't in the beginning, and that's okay.
And that's what gave Natasha, so Natasha started thinking, okay, so it is okay to grieve, and my husband's an idiot for saying it got to be positive right now, but it, maybe in a couple of weeks I'll feel that way, and it did turn around. I was just trying to really be proactive on the positive thing a little earlier than maybe, you know, expected.
No,
yeah,
just,
and you know, I can't imagine being on the other side of that coin. You know, I know what I was dealing with. But if I had to watch somebody else deal with that, I would be, oh, gosh, I can't even imagine. Because you know how you're dealing with it. You know what your body's doing. You know what your emotions are. And I always, you know, joke with Craig. I'm like, you could never get that. You couldn't handle it. It would be too much for you. And he's like, but I'm so positive. I said, I know, but you can never get that. Because I wouldn't want to ever see him have to go through any of that. I wouldn't want anybody to go through it. So
before you came, we were talking about how God knows what each of us can handle, and he doesn't give, you know, that person what he can't handle, but the other person, oh yeah, he can handle it, so I'm going to give it to him, and vice versa. Each trial is tailor-made to the individual to help them grow into the person who he created you to be. And I guess that's why men don't have babies, because we would
forget it. We'd there'd be no more
trouble.
Population left, right?
Yeah, no more sex, no more nothing, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, but I know exactly what you're talking about, because, you know, I learned a long time ago to stop asking women who have little pouches in their tummy, oh, how many months are you pregnant?
Oh, God.
I know. Right?
Yeah, no, you can't ask that. Yeah.
Realize not every woman who has a little pouch in their tummy is pregnant. You know,
right.
So we dumb things, and just I'm going to apologize in advance for all the dumb things I'm going to say ever until I die.
Oh, I wake up in the morning and turn to my wife and say, I'm sorry for the day, and I'm good.
Just, hey, I got to remember that one.
So, you guys are funny.
Yeah, we are funny. That's why you love us.
Exactly.
So you're talking about the grief process, and with any grief process, you know, a lot of people don't understand that there's also an anticipated grief process. We can grieve over things that we anticipate losing. So, you know, that starts with denial. Oh, my God, this isn't happening to me. No way is this happening to me. You know, and that's when you were pounding your fist on the doctor saying, well, I didn't have cancer when I came in here. Classic denial. You know, and then when we realize that denial isn't going to help, and reality kicks in, and we don't become psychotic and start living in a fantasy world, then we start getting angry. Oh, my God, you know, why is this happening? It's your fault. My fault. It's his fault. It's the hospital's fault. You know, who did this? You know, so I can blame them, you know. And then when we realize that anger's not getting us anywhere except pissing a lot of people off, then we move into bargaining. Well, maybe I'm a good negotiator. Maybe I can negotiate my way out of this one, you know. But, you know, the only problem is, you know, it works if you're talking boyfriend, girlfriend, and you just lost, she just dumped you, and you're feeling awful, you know, like Rose, you said, then, you know, you try to negotiate, like you call her, can we still be friends? You know, at least don't sever that cord, but, you know, death and cancer, some of these things are just not negotiable, and so that, when you realize that, then you move on to depression. You say, oh, you know, I'm depressed. This is awful. I just want to die. I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to get dressed. And that's pretty dangerous, because most suicides happen while someone is depressed. So, you know, you want to, I would suggest, if you are clinically depressed, get some help. Go see a doctor. You know, there's no shame in having an antidepressant prescribed or anything like that. And, you know, it's temporary. If you don't need it anymore, then great. And then finally, we get to that wonderful thing called acceptance. And it sounds like you and your friend went through the grief process pretty darn fast. How long did it take, I think, to go through all of those feelings?
It was on and off. It would come and go. You know, you'd have good days and bad days, and you'd go through treatments, and then, you know, that you'd think, okay, I can do this, and then you'd go through a few more treatments, and then one of them would hit you really hard, and you'd go, this totally sucks. I can't stand this, and I want out. And then you start trying to make deals with the doctor to let you out early, and, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She tried to convince the doctor. Well, I mean, there's a whole story there that we saw a clear PET scan after after the fourth treatment, right, huh?
Yeah, something like
after
that.
After the fourth treatment, she sees a PET scan that's totally clear. But what we don't realize, being not the doctors, is there's microscopic cancer cells that are still in the body that the last eight chemos are going to fix. And we're like, yeah, but we don't see any cancer. And that's got to mess with your mind. So Natasha went into negotiating mode with the doctor saying, all right, what if we do, like, instead of eight more, we do, like, three more? Because that should do it, you know, that whole thing. So, you know, and the doctor would say no, and that messed with her head, I would assume. You know, seeing a clear scan yet still being beaten down every 2 weeks with a new chemo, even though you don't see cancer on the screen anymore. So she went into negotiating mode a lot, and that's where I think the eighth chemo, where right, Tosh, you didn't, you were ready to check out.
Yeah, I didn't think I was coming out of that one because I couldn't lift my head. I couldn't call anyone. I couldn't say anything. I was completely. I don't know. It was the weirdest experience. I just couldn't move. And I think physically, mentally, everything, I was just so drained.
It was four more chemos after seeing a clear scan. And she goes, I have to do four more after this eighth one, and I'm already half dead, I feel. So, you know, you go into the depression like you just said, Dave, you know?
I just couldn't. I was laying down, recovering from the treatment, and I physically could not move. And I just, that was a very scary reality. I just remember going, oh, wow, this must be what it must be like to be ending. And it was very, very scary. And I
so you're ready.
It was scary because I didn't want that. And so I just laid down and went, okay, God, what are we doing here? I said, if this is it, I need some clarity. And I just kind of went through every fear that I've ever had as far as, you know, checking out. And I faced them all, and I thought about them all, and I went, okay, so if this happens, this happens. You know, if A equals B and B equals C, then this is where we're going. And I had a tremendous peace about it. There was no, the anxiety completely left, the fear left, all of it just went away. And I stood up and got up, and I went, oh, all right, we're done here. And that was a huge turning point for me. I was able to get through the rest of the treatments, and I never had that type of fear again. So it's
you
interesting.
You were going through the valley of the shadow of death, and you almost gave up.
Yeah. I wasn't giving up. I just felt that I had no choice. When your body and physical, like you can't lift your head to call somebody and your voice is not working, you try and say something and nothing's coming, it's a really weird sensation. It's almost like I was just put on a pause button there for a minute, and I don't know what that was about. I couldn't tell you why that happened, but clearly it needed to happen because I needed to get past this. And
I totally know.
Mind was working great.
I totally know what you're talking about, Natasha, because, you know, my wife and I would always say, oh, well, if I got cancer, you know, I'm not taking chemo. I'm just going to die, you know, and I've had that attitude. But recently I had broken my arm about 15 years ago, and it kept getting infected. Like 7 years later, got infected, then 10 years later, then 15 years later, got infected, just last year. And this time it got so bad that they had to open me up and clean out the infection and pull out that titanium rod that was in there that was causing the infection. And so they sent me home with an IV and a PICC line down into my heart, you know, and they said 6 weeks of IV in the morning and in the afternoon. And by the third day, I felt like I was on chemotherapy. I'm sure I was. But I felt so bad. My stomach was always upset. I was always nauseous. I had diarrhea. And I said, you know, I don't want to go through this. Another 5.5 weeks, I'm ready to quit. I'm ready to die. I've made peace with my maker. My wife can handle things. I have life insurance. The kids won't miss me. We'll all be in heaven soon. I was ready to check out. That's how much of a wimp I am, but I minimize my pain.
Hey, I had the same thing. I had an infected prostate, and my PSA was 29. And everyone thought I was dying of cancer, but it was just an infection. And I was on, 6 weeks, Tosh, of antibiotics?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. I did IVs for a week and then oral, and I was the same way, Dave. It was destroying my body. And I,
yeah, it was killing everything.
What?
It was killing all the good bacteria that I need, apparently.
Yeah. It was awful. And that's only one millionth of what Natasha went through. One billionth, probably. You know?
Well, when I told the doctor I didn't want to do this anymore, he says, no, you could die. I says, I'm ready to die. He says, listen, let me try something else. And he called me back and he says, okay, instead of a drip IV once in the morning, once a night, that we've got this little push IV. You just put it for 30 seconds once a day, just boom, and it's done. And see if you like that better. So I, okay, I'll try it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Maybe some of me wanted to keep living. I don't know. But it was much better, and I handled it, and I went to 6 weeks. But I'll always remember that. So, wow. Okay, so I exposed to the world what a wimp a bee I am. So did you, Craig.
There you go. I'm with you.
Okay, so let's talk about your friends and family, Natasha, because I know when you have a problem, everybody's calling you with somebody's phone number or some doctor who did this and the latest and greatest of this. And after about the 10th phone call or the 20th email, you say, you know what, we can't possibly check all of these out. And the ones we check out, you know, they're just people trying to sell stuff. Insurance doesn't cover it. They want $20,000. And after a while, you just turn people off. So tell me if that happened to you.
Well, I personally did. I just hibernated. I couldn't.
Yeah, but honey, remember the one phone call you got from Shannon's friend?
Oh, yeah, but that was just, you know, a good intention gone wrong.
Well, that's what I think he's asking. Did you get any of those phone calls?
One person called me, and I'm not going to say who it was or what it was, but it was basically, hi, I'm here to help you. Don't worry about this. My brother died of cancer, and I walked him through his death. And I went, okay, well, I'm not dying, but thanks for the call. Goodbye. And it was just, I don't think she realized what she was saying as she was saying it. And, of course, it was just like, oh, my gosh, is that what people think? And I'll tell you this much. There is a whole thing that goes on when you're the cancer patient that really, really is awful because you go out into the world and everybody knows and everyone in your community knows and everybody whispers because they see you out or, you know, on your good week and you make it to the grocery store and people point and whisper and feel sorry for you. And it is the most awful existence during that time because nobody wants the pity. Nobody wants to be looked at like, oh, that poor girl. And that was harder than anything, was how people reacted to me. And I told one of my friends, I said, it's the worst when you go out and people don't know what to say and they say things because they want to be helpful. And then the next thing you know, they're saying something that's making you feel like even worse. And, you know, I was at the store and this lady walked up to me. She said, oh, I heard what you're going through. And then she looked in my grocery basket and she goes, you know, you might not want to buy X, Y, and Z because these things cause cancer. And it wasn't even anything that I had in the basket. And I thought, oh, I get it. So now this is my fault that I'm sick because I must have done so people think that I must not be eating enough salad or enough this or enough that. And I cannot tell you the amount of Facebook posts I see on a daily basis of really well-intentioned people putting up pictures of fruits and vegetables going, if you think cancer's, you know, expensive, or do you think fruits and vegetables are expensive, try cancer. And I literally want to just say, good luck with the salad when you're getting hit by a bus. Because it just doesn't add up. There are so many other factors. Yes, I am a very clean eater. Ask anybody. I was the girl shopping at Whole Foods and buying organic and doing everything. Still got it.
And she still got it.
We have a very good friend who is probably the queen of organics. She grew her own garden and ended up dying of some type of
cervical cancer.
Yeah.
It is not, you know what I mean? There's just so many factors. It's the water, the air, the, you know, the ozone, whatever. And for people to now have turned on, I really feel like people have turned on each other and said, well, it's because you didn't eat enough of this that you have this now. And I think that is the part that as a society we really have to be mindful of when we look at people who are struggling. You know, it's a really hard thing to take when you're fighting for your life and people are going, well, if you just would have juiced more. I'm like, seriously? You're talking to the wrong girl on this one. If I was, you know, doing a bunch of stuff that was unhealthy, we could talk about it, but I'm not. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do anything. I'm, like, ridiculous. The doctor, I asked him on one occasion, I said, okay, if you guys are really good at this and you know how to fix it, why can't you tell me where it came from? And his exact answer to me was, we don't know. It could have happened while you were in your mother's body. You could, a piece of DNA could have been damaged all the way back then, and it could have been triggered at 40 years old. Nobody knows. And that actually was a little helpful because I thought, okay, that I can't help. I can't help if one of my little DNA particles didn't work out perfectly. And then I look at little babies who get sick, and I go, really? Did they not eat enough salad? Really, people? So I just a little bit passionate.
People
about
try to help, but sometimes they say the wrong things. You know, you've probably heard that a million times, Dave.
I totally understand.
Well, I don't believe a whole hour has passed already. We have to go. Craig and Natasha, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate you. We love you. We are praying that that cancer never, ever, ever comes back, and I believe that. So thanks again, folks, for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.